I drink a lot of coffee these days. And if you listen like 10 minutes in, you'll understand why I'm drinking so much coffee these days, because I'm just not getting restful sleep. I'm pretty damn tired during the day. And I'm drinking a lot of coffee, and I'm drinking a lot of Cometeer. I'm drinking other coffee outside of Cometeer because anytime I can get my hands on legal speed, I'm going to get it, especially in the state I'm in. But Cometeer is a game changer. If you're suspect, or if you have that nerd coffee friend, right? The Hefeweizen principal person, the first person that drank Hefeweizen in college that is now a coffee nerd.
Uh-huh.
This is what's going to happen. They're going to taste it, and they're going to publicly say, oh, it's not very good. It's not this, it's not that. But privately, their inner monologue is like, oh my God.
I've wasted
my life. Because all you do is defrost, or you don't have to defrost it, just a little bit. It can be melted down in your fridge, and you can have iced coffee, or you can just pour like 8 ounces of hot water, or you can pour, we still don't know the right amount for an espresso. If we shake it up, it's delicious.
Mm-hmm.
It's great for savory. It's great for cooking in general. Cometeer, you can't go wrong. And our good friend Seth Rogen has a houseplant coffee, which probably pairs well with some of the things you would associate with Seth Rogen. It was featured in our Dinner Time Live, the caviar episode. You can purchase the houseplant Cometeer coffee and many of the other roasters, including Bird Rock, Clatch, George Howell, and Equator from the Cometeer website. If you visit Cometeer.com/Chang, you can get $20 off your first order. That's Cometeer.com/Chang to get $20 off your first order. And this is Monday. Tomorrow, you're going to get the new season, same season mm-hmm. of Dinner Time Live. Hopefully better, bigger, and badder. I think we've learned a lot of things, and we'll see. We'll see if we get better. But I have no doubt by your comments, you'll continue to hate it.
Love you guys.
Let's get on to the show. Welcome to the Dave Chang Show, part of the Ringer Podcast Network, presented by Major Dillon Media. Thank you, Ola Tango, as always. Yeah, that introduction when you, if you listen or watch the Dinner Time Live episode with Bill Simmons and Bert Kreischer, I really had a hard time doing the introduction to this podcast. I would sit in the old office at the Ringer at Sunset Gower, and the first like 3 episodes, and Bill was instrumental in allowing this podcast to happen. We were doing sort of the pre-opening diaries, and he held my hand. We did like 3 or 4 like test ones. And the first like 2 or 3 episodes, he was sitting right next to me. And I can't dance and I can't sing, mainly because I get embarrassed when other people are doing it, even though I was like signing up to do this. And I couldn't.
Was it harder because he was sitting there though?
Yeah.
It was harder.
But also, I didn't know what the hell I was doing, you know, reading it. And I just realized, wow, I can read it so fast now. But beforehand, I felt like Rocky Balboa trying to do that commercial in the first Rocky.
Uh-huh.
And I just didn't know what was going on. And he literally looked at me and I knew what was in his head.
See, I always thought it was just you sort of projecting this, being like, oh, I couldn't do it. Because I wasn't in the room for those first couple. But Bill remembers it distinctly and brings it up.
He brings it up all the time. Because it was that bad. I was like, welcome, Chang Show. Anyway, it was not good. And I remember doing when J.J. Redick was still at the Ringer, I did his podcast at his studio. And I remember in awe, not of J.J.'s basketball presence, prowess, or knowledge. I was in awe of J.J.'s ability to just rattle off the introduction of his show without reading anything. I was like, holy Christ. JJ, you are a god.
He can say, welcome to the JJ Redick podcast. That's insane.
For those that have been listening, I have been complaining about my back. I finally got my MRI, and let's just goddamn health insurance companies. if you are in pain and you need an MRI, mm-hmm. they know that you can get it right away. They probably need, everybody that thinks they need an MRI should get it immediately. Mm-hmm. But the way health insurance plays out is you got to wait. And they offer you, like, you can pay up front, which is like $5,000, $7,000, $10,000, mm-hmm. or you got to get approved by a health insurance company.
Yeah.
And I waited 2.5 weeks.
For them to just give you clearance to do it.
And then when I got it, the results literally on the website that they tell you to go says, it's in 2.5 weeks from now. I'm like, I can't.
They're playing chicken with you. They're like, he won't be hurting.
So I had to get a physical copy on a CD and bring it to my doctor.
Of the results. The actual, yeah. Like, on a CD-ROM.
Yeah, disc. Absolutely.
Wow.
You know, it's just a bullshit game that they play. I was so pissed. I could have used this information
yeah.
a while back. Anyway, so last year, literally a year to the date, mm-hmm. I herniated my L5-S1.
Yes, I remember.
Two discs. A year to the date later, 365 days later, because the doctor was going through this chart, and he's like, oh man, this is the exact same date. My neck disc is 6 and 7, like obliterated.
Well, the last time it was because you were doing something. Was there like an inciting incident that caused this one? Do you remember hurting
so, it? No, this is what we're thinking about. I never hurt that. But remember I was in the car accident like 18 uh-huh, months yeah, ago? Yeah, yeah. They're like...
They should... Next time you go in, you should just do like they do at the dentist and be like, can I go ahead and schedule my next MRI 6 months from now?
So like he was saying that maybe that could have been it and it just gradually got worse. Oh my God. It was like an erosion on a, you know, by the side of a house on a riverbank.
Because it's like in your neck, it's like where you would have like a whiplash of getting hit by a car. Right?
I guess. I don't know because I've never had like a neck injury before, but I did then.
Yeah.
But I never got an MRI. I just got an X-ray. Anyway, I got an epidural. It is not fun to have. The neck up, if you do have a bad back, man, so many, take care of your back.
Can I ask a dumb question? Is the epidural that you got, is it the exact same thing as you wince to drink some coffee? Is it the exact same thing that a woman in labor gets?
I think so. I don't know. I mean, I've had several in my life, in my back. Mm-hmm. I think the technology's changed somewhat. Mm-hmm. Because I used to get random back pain anyway. I will tell you that if you get in your lower back, the needle is like this big.
Oh my God.
Literally this big.
Oh my God.
So you need an MRI to be able to locate where they need to inject the shots.
Oh, okay.
Right? So first they give you anesthesia around it so you don't feel anything. They numb it down. And then you feel like...
And they just jam
just somebody
gigantic.
Like... It is one of the worst.
You feel like the pressure on your...
In my lower back, that one sucks because you literally feel like you're being invaded by something.
Oh my God.
This one, not as bad. It's not awesome, but it's not as bad.
It's supposed to last you for a while?
This whole thing is about pain management. Mm. So if it works well, then I will probably get another one in about 3 weeks or 4 weeks. And then they have this graph of percentages. So if I'm improving, then... If I'm a responder to the cortisol, then it's more than likely that I won't need surgery. But my doctor, my primary physician said, you need to get surgery. I was like,
have you had a major surgery before? Have you had like a go under and get...
Other than like removing a polyp on a, you know?
Right.
But no. So it's a problem. And again... Everyone that's a spinal doctor or of that world, mm-hmm. they all will say this. If you go to 10 different doctors, all 10 doctors will tell you 10 different things. And every one of them's right. And I was like, what the fuck kind of statement is that?
It's a logic puzzle.
I was like,
if 10 doctors are all correct and they all say different things.
So the guy I saw today was like, you don't need surgery. I don't think you need surgery, but. If you're going to see this doctor, he's probably, you know. And I was like, so what do I do? He's like, at the end of the day, it's up to you. I'm like.
I hate that so much. I mean, I understand like how much they're hemmed in by sort of malpractice lawsuits. But they're like, doctors can't tell you. They can't sort of tell you anything.
So surgery is a little bit difficult right now because we we have this Netflix show.
Yeah.
And we have a few other things coming on with Momofuku. This year is going to be intensely busy. Intensely busy. So I am just airing.
You don't have 6 months just lay around and recover and recuperate?
I was like, how long is recovery? And they're like 1 to 2 months. I was like,
where am I going
to find 1 to 2 months for recovery?
Oh, man. I appreciate you, man. There's so many people counting on Dinner Time Live right now on what we're doing. And it's all on your very busted shoulders.
I'm going to get stem cells. I'm going to start wearing like purple crystals. I don't care. Whatever I need to do to make things better, I will do it.
This is an excellent
prank. If I need to start doing herb life, I'll do it.
This is a great pranking opportunity. I'm going to start bringing you weird hats and shirts. Whatever.
Rabbit's foot? I don't give a shit. Give it to me.
I'm going to bring you some elixirs and just see how much stuff
turmeric
I can get
mask,
you to do.
Give it to me. I don't give a shit. I am open for business, folks. Anything and everything that you think might be better for me to improve my back, great.
If I'm on
this anti-inflammatory diet, fuck it.
If you're listening out there and you have any sort of alternative medicine things that you think will work, write in to askdave@majordomomedia.com. Send your suggestions in.
Well, before we get to the pod, just speaking of this, so I did a whole year on alternative, like religious medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big believer in the placebo effect.
A placebo effect, to your point. If you feel better, you feel better.
Fucking New York Dave would just literally just assassinate LA Dave.
You have been like resisting this for this long, but this is why people start charging crystals. They run out of other things to do. I can't believe you're going alternative medicine.
I am. You know how crazy it is that I'm open for business for anything? I had raw kefir milk.
Just as a anti-inflammatory?
Like, yeah, I was like, fuck it. I literally was like, fuck it. And guess what? Tastes terrible.
But you're doing these, isn't the whole thing, not to take a shit on anybody's alternative medicine practices, but like, you're also taking real medicine.
Oh yeah, I have it in my pocket.
So that's what I'm saying. It's like, if you get an epidural and then you drink some kefir, you're not going to be like, well, I think the kefir really works. Like, that's
It's a little bit like saying you're an atheist, but at the very last second before you die, I accept Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior, right?
I mean, cover your bases.
All my bases covered.
Cover your bases.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. Like, for example, aspirin came from some people, like, indigenous tribe just chewing on this bark, then that's why they didn't get malaria or something like that. I can't remember what it was.
And it turned out to be
quinine.
That was the basis of real medicine later. Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Okay. Fine.
All right.
Fine.
I am open. When I say I'm open for business, I'm open for anything. Anyway. Are we done?
No, we've not yet begun to podcast.
This is true. This episode is brought to you by Pure Leaf Iced Tea. Great iced tea takes you somewhere else, like new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea that we have here at the Spotify Studios and drink quite a bit, where unexpectedly blackberry flavor transports you to a berry delicious place. So refreshing, you may never want to leave. You will eventually have to, though. But take your time. Try new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea. Visit amazon.com/pureleaf and enter 20 Pure Leaf. That's 20 Pure Leaf for 20% off your purchase of new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Also, you know, this eye's bloodshot because one of the medicines I'm on thins out all my blood. I was like, and I take baby aspirin, and then I read it. It's like, do not take low-dose aspirin with this pill. And I was like, now you fucking tell me. Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God.
I'm bleeding out of my eyes.
Hey, would you, I know the answer to this, but like, if you could become like part cyborg, if they just replace your L5, L6, whatever, with just like a robo part, you do that?
100%. 100%.
How much of your body, like if you think about like Nebula in the Marvel
Put some movies, NVIDIA chip right in here. Yeah, man.
Put some NVIDIA stock in my portfolio. What is your, what would, you know, I'm talking about Nebula from the Guardians of the Galaxy. Mm-hmm. What percentage would you go in replacing body parts if you could?
100%. 100%. I mean, why not? You know, as long as my consciousness stays the same, like,
you wouldn't want to retain just,
they're
like,
not going to make it worse than it already is.
It's true. No,
okay.
There's not going to be any downgrades to your body.
Upgrades across the board.
If you could maintain consciousness, so
my consciousness, you're going to upload to the cloud.
So I'm going
to
say that. Yeah. So, okay, another Marvel one. Like, there's that weird evil Russian guy, I think, uploads his consciousness to like an old IBM 80s computer. Would you do that?
I think they're thinking about Hydra and Avengers.
Yeah, Hydra and Avengers. Would you do that too? Would you just be, when you die, can you, if you just uploaded your consciousness to a computer, you couldn't do anything, but you're just in a computer and you could just harass Avengers that came to steal your stuff. Would you live in a computer? Would your consciousness live in a computer?
Who says you don't already?
That's true.
All right. That's
a thought that's going to fester. Anyway, digression. What are we doing today?
I don't know.
What do we got? Three things. You have three things here.
Okay. What are the three things I think about when coming up with menus for dinner time live guests? Well, this is an interesting question. Number one is dietary restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. And we'll revisit them all. Two is, what is possible to cook within an hour? So we've allowed ourselves to cook some things beforehand, and sometimes we cook too much beforehand. It's finding that right balance of the right dishes that you can cook live. And three is, is it useful? Does it make sense? You know, I think one of the criticisms we got for the caviar episode was, so you just put caviar in everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the one thing, is how do you make it pragmatic, practical, and useful? Very difficult. But, you know, there's a bunch of criteria. But number one, going back to the guest dietary restrictions, that's a huge one. I know we got a couple of vegans coming up, mm-hmm. vegetarians.
But having that restriction in a lot of ways is better than not having a restriction. Just vegan, vegetarian.
Let me tell you what. There's a lot of celebrities, people of note, that are secret vegan vegetarians.
That are secret vegan vegetarians.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Or I thought you were going to say that there are non-practicing faux vegan vegetarians.
Isn't that the same thing?
No, you were saying there are people who are secretly vegan or people who say they're vegan who are actually not.
Both. There's both. I find that there's people that you read about that say they're vegetarian, but they're not anymore.
Uh-huh.
And there's a lot of people now that are, I won't say a lot. We have seen through speaking in the grapevine that, oh, I didn't realize that person was vegetarian now.
Mm. Oh, I see.
Promote it, yeah.
Why do you think that they would hide it?
I don't know.
Relatability.
I don't know.
Q score. All right, so dietaries is the first consideration, obviously.
I guess because they're trying to reach the Joe Rogan audience. You know, it's an important part of their demographic.
I do think that. I think you got to kind of like hide it to reach the broadest possible audience.
Yeah.
You want to be like one of those coastal vegan elites.
Yeah.
So dietaries. Obviously, you don't want to, like, you can't offend anybody's, you know, religious or otherwise restrictions.
Which is, again, people may not realize how significant that is. And it has, the reason why I, in all truths and seriousness, I didn't want to do it the first six episodes, mainly because I wanted to be comfortable trying to cook something that was already highly uncomfortable for me. And I'll be honest, I think we cook great vegetarian food, but vegan isn't necessarily my strong suit.
Hmm.
So, and that's basically it. And I actually now want to do it to force myself to like spend time to create a better menu for them. So we have a couple of them coming up. Two was, what was the second one I said?
Cooking it in an hour.
Right. So the second criteria was time.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I cook a lot of soups and stews, right? If you were doing, we're going to get back to the draft combine thing later in the show. But if this was a draft combine, they'd be like, whoa. And I was coming through, I was in Indianapolis and there's all these scouts looking at me. They're like, dude, this guy's fucking soup stew skills are off the fucking charts, man. Whoa, his brazing ability is
he runs
fucking,
a 4.25 in soup stew.
It's fucking crazy. He just set a combine record. Okay. But when it comes to, you know, those things take time and you can cook them in a pressure cooker, but it's not something that is visual as well, right? Because it was up to me, I'd just be making brown foods. You know what I mean?
You would just be scooping out of brown pots into a bowl. Yeah.
But not only visually, it's not, it's just hard to get done in an hour. We can do it. We have tried to do it. We will do it. But now we've realized that some of those dishes might be better off beforehand, like cooking. And, you know, we give ourselves one or two dishes that I've started at like 1 p.m., right? And we have to, right? Because now guests are sort of eating before we go live. So that takes a huge part of my culinary strength away, right?
Right.
So I might have very, very, very fast soup stew scores.
Yeah. You do like 25 reps on the bourguignon press.
But my, you know, and I'm really good at quick things. Things that I can cook very quickly, mostly Asian stuff. Very, very good. But it's the intermediate game that I can't find the target. You know what I mean? Or it's like my vertical. It's like, whoa.
Yeah. And so so people understand that is a, basically what you're talking about is a dish that you can start from scratch and finish in 12 to 15 minutes so that we can show the entire thing on the show.
Yeah.
Like the whole process. Like that's a tough, like, and that has proven, I think, to be the toughest window to find and figure out.
So hard.
So hard.
And they are available. They're there like rolling pastas, right? So, you know, I can make a beautiful raviolo without cameras and the crunch and guests and all this stuff. And again, if I was young Dave, I'd be like, this fucking clown. Yeah. But there's things that you can do, but it still, it takes time, right? Mm-hmm. To do it well, especially when you're not making this food every day. If we made the same food from the episode with Rashida and Steve Young and we did it for the whole season, I would be able to do it with my eyes closed by now. Not eyes closed, but it'd be so easy.
Yeah.
That I'd probably do like two or three more dishes.
Yeah. I always think about it like, they talk about it in football is like installing the new offense. Like when you go to a kitchen, you're installing the new menu, right? It takes reps and reps and reps to like dial in that menu so that everyone can cook it. You're doing each thing exactly one time.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to like pull it off in one time.
So yeah, like that is difficult. You know, there are things, I'll give you an example. Having the ability to make some kind of starchy pasta thing from scratch. For example, potato gnocchi would be one. We already did that with Parisian gnocchi. Those are good examples of things you can do. Another one would be like, say, spetzel. You can do that in 15 minutes, start to finish. The problem with a 15-minute dish from start to finish is this. At least with doing Dinner Time Live, you have other things cooking. And you have to, if you're going to do that, your focus has to be completely on that for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Right? So a spetzel is, all right, I got 1-to-1-to-1 ratio, egg, flour, milk. You know, I make the dough, I make the batter, you know, and I'll get like a perforated hotel pan, I'll squeeze it out, blah, blah, blah. Those are all easy steps, but it takes solid 15 minutes of me not being able to do anything else.
While people are sitting there waiting for you to talk to them, host them, joke with them, listen to their, respond to their questions. Explain what you're doing, you know, all the whole entire time. So it's 15 minutes if it's unbroken concentration. And
that's what makes these intermediate dishes so damn difficult, right? Mm-hmm. Like making raviolo. I want to make the dough from scratch. In fact, I've wanted to make ricotta from scratch, the pasta from scratch, everything from scratch. And we tried that once, but it takes like 45 minutes to do the whole thing. And while that might make sense in an edited TV show, when it's live, I have 45 minutes of dead air of me not being able to fulfill any other role. Very, very difficult. So something like that needs your entire attention. And I don't know if that makes sense to anybody that's listening, but as a professional cook, hopefully you can empathize. So the intermediate things are somewhat difficult to do. If I didn't have to talk to them, right? But this is like a joke.
But those intermediate dishes also speak to your third thing, which is like that kind of pragmatic relatability thing, right? People want to feel like they can achieve the same thing.
Chris, as an example, live with guests is literally like game day Sunday with a pass rush coming at you as a quarterback.
Right.
Right. Everything else is hitting golf balls in a driving range.
Yeah.
Okay. So listen, hopefully they'll do something with us Try Guys. I'm just saying, motherfuckers. Listen, Try Guys, I love you guys. You guys are great.
Well, we saw.
But when I said that this is the first live show, I mean that. It's like actually the first live cooking show. All right. You know what I mean?
Despite whatever you guys make.
That actually makes tasty food.
Oh, man. Throw it down the gauntlet.
And good luck. I think you guys are just talking to each other. All right. Good luck there. I would like to come visit you guys as a guest while you're doing this live.
Oh, let's see that. So but these things, whether it's the time limit, the pragmatism, the usefulness of it, the dietary restrictions, you haven't even talked about like all of those considerations don't even take into account having to come up with some sort of thematic four-course menu that means something that people are going to like. All of that is without even thinking.
With
no help whatsoever.
We do not have a prep team, folks.
Yeah.
It is a one-man show right now.
But I think you should just talk about this show we're going to have tomorrow. Like that process, we iterated on.
Okay. So we have one of our guests tomorrow. In the research, it was shown that there was a good stretch where he really loved going to Benihana teppanyaki-like restaurants. On the other hand, has literally had his own Food Network show eating, and food is actually integral to his entire comedic routine. Mm-hmm. So trying to find something that might work, that links it all together, very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So in fact, I was trying to do Spanish.
Started with wanting to do Spanish.
Basque region.
Because you could see a Spanish menu.
Yeah.
You could see it. But we kept on bumping into like, what does this necessarily mean for these guys? Right. And then you try to iterate on a Chicago menu.
Oh, yeah. Try to do a Chicago menu. And I was like, okay, outside of making the hot dog, outside of making a beef sandwich, and I didn't need those motherfuckers out there. I could already envision the,
you don't know, what about this? Yeah.
This motherfucker doesn't even come to Chicago.
He's never been to Chicago.
You're right, because I don't fucking go to Chicago for the Beard Awards anymore. We should go back to fucking New York or Las Vegas. Fucking Ooh. Chicago.
But
like, I love Chicago.
I love eating there, but there was
Beard
no
Awards
way
should be in Vegas or New York or never, ever again. Ever. Just close it all down.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Vital Farms. No matter how you like your eggs, scrambled, over easy, or sunny side up, the people at Vital Farms believe in one thing, keeping it bullshit-free. That's why their pasture-raised eggs come from hens who each have over 108 square feet of space to roam and forage all year round. So you can spend less time questioning your food and more time enjoying it. Look for Vital Farms in your grocery store and learn more at vitalfarms.com. Vital Farms, keeping it bullshit-free.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on cars.com.
I could feel it when we were talking about this menu, like, you could come up with four courses for either of these things, but nothing felt like it was the thing.
And also the third category is like useful, right? Yeah. And we're going to try really hard to make sure that the initial thesis was to get ingredients from local grocery stores. Yeah. We did that until we didn't.
We got some notes back on the caviar episode, which we all enjoyed. That, like, relatability.
Relatability.
But we're also trying to...
not everyone's going to get the nicest piece of Miyazaki ribeye.
And then just put caviar on it and wrap it up and eat it.
And all the fish that we can get. And I work best with constraints.
Yeah.
But I don't want to because I'm an addict for everything. Give it all to me. So that's the real problem we already like broke away and deviated from what I intended us to do or we all agreed upon. So these next episodes, I won't promise for sure because, you know, I'll fall off the wagon occasionally. That's okay. But
you just live on the side of the wagon. Just walk next to the wagon.
But we're going to try very hard. Mm-hmm. So this episode, we're going to try to get all our ingredients at Costco.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to make it more relatable, we're going to try to make it teppanyaki mm-hmm. style. In fact, I have a griddle that I purchased many months ago because the original version of this whole show was just to do burgers.
Yeah.
Right? Which, if you saw the episode with Nick Kroll and John Mulaney, you'll see how horrible that fucking burger actually was. Just literally was my nightmare. Wait, is it a unsauced sloppy Joe? That's what I thought about. It's like, it's a sloppy Joe without any sauce.
Listen, it was a little loose. It was a little, but that's why when you grind beef to order in the moment, it was a little loose.
Yeah, it wasn't the best use of time. Anyway, how do we make it useful and how do we try to find ways to cook things? Blah, blah, blah.
But this was a great moment yesterday when Brandon, our showrunner, walked in and, you know, you were sort of like running into a wall with your menus. And then he said, really likes teppanyaki.
Well, this is why I need, this is a call for working in person, not remote.
Because that little detail of just walking through the room and almost throwaway comment unlocks everything for you.
And I miss that, being able to talk to chefs or cooks or anything that's happening or some kind of conversation or whatever. It could be like, hey, I was listening to like Peter Gabriel for the first time. You know, something unlocks. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh yeah, I remember eating a hot dog while watching Say Anything. And that hot dog I had with this cherry Slurpee, you know, and that flavor is going to pair well with this duck. But then that's how it all works.
Mm-hmm.
But without getting that data, it's hard to connect anything. Being in the room with the producers, having that conversation, I was whiteboarding it out. And I literally whiteboard everything out. And that was the unlock.
Mm-hmm.
After we spent 2 hours figuring out how to make a deep dish pizza. And the reason why I didn't do a deep dish pizza is because, I don't need people to say, oh, this is like the Tim Parmo. Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right,
mm-hmm.
it's out.
But
I didn't need people like, whoa, we like tavern style pizza.
We're aware of all of these things. We're aware of the Chicago things, the rib tips and the tamales. And the rainbow cones. We got it. So, but I
can imagine someone just do Grant's helium balloon.
Just do Grant's helium balloon.
Just a sick but dish.
I think it's just like, from a creative perspective, I agree. Like I live for that moment of just like, oh, that's it then. That's the right idea. And then when you said like, let's do Costco, I don't know if it'll work, but when you hear like a Costco based teppan menu.
Well, the reason why this sort of had alignment for me is, if I ever opened up another small, super, not private, but really personal 5-seat restaurant, that one that all chefs think about, 4-seat restaurant, 2-seat restaurant, which is sort of what this is, and it was set up and I was able to design it exactly the way I want, where it didn't look necessarily like a teppan. I would have, burner, like charcoal. I would have burners. I would have a setup that would be sick, that I'd design, it'd be fun. You know, my dream is no menu. Here's some fish, here's some vegetables, here's the meat, and here's the rice. And I've talked about this before, and to be able to have the ability to interpret what a guest might want, it's like, okay, I'm slicing some beautiful tuna, here you go. You want some more tuna? Here you go, right? Oh, you want it a little bit this way? Great. Here's a salad. How do you want your rice cooked? Do you want a kanji? Do you want whatever? You just want plain steamed, or do you want it to be like a donabe style with mushrooms? I got some really, really great matsutake mushrooms that could go blah, blah, blah. And then I simply start cooking beef slice by slice for the guest. In my mind, that is what I can do, but the setup isn't necessarily right. They're going to be to my left. There's going to be cameras, blah, blah, blah. And I've already figured out that I'm not going to be able to do that as well as I'd like. I'm going to try, but I've never done it before, you know? And by putting that griddle down, it prevents me from actually having burners. So I'm pot committed to cooking in that way. So the menu right now, and again, it's like, if I make it so it's more modern teppanyaki in Kyoto or Japan or Sapporo, I don't know if the audience at large watching, which is all 10 people, would ever understand what it is. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because it's completely different from the American teppanyaki experience.
Right.
Not completely different. There are a lot of similarities, right? But it's night and day to me. And if I do that, then the ingredients for this menu start to veer off towards super, 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 super soigne. And I was like, ah, shit, I can't do that. So in my mind, I wrote out the menu. I was like, I can't do that. Where am I going to get those, you know, perfect leeks and da-da-da-da? I can't. I'm going to get this wasabi, but I can't, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm going to get the perfect onions from Kyoto delivered. And that's when you have a restaurant, you're able to do that and you put that into the cost of things. We're trying, again, going back to the thesis, to make this relatable as best we can, even though it's not relatable whatsoever. So I was like, Costco, all right? I like going to Costco. Everyone can buy the, sort of the same stuff. They have Wagyu or
American Wagyu.
Wagyu. Based on the true story of a Japanese cow. They have everything. And I'm going to figure out how to do that. So now, what are the things you have to make? I have to make a fried rice. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm going to do yakisoba noodles because that's what you would get, right? I don't know if I'm going to do the volcano and onions and all these other things, but I do know that I'm going to have sauteed vegetables. I do know I'm going to have shrimp or lobster. Mm-hmm. And I definitely have to do some courses of beef, maybe chicken. All right, now, how do I now compose dishes, et cetera, et cetera? So it's actually not that hard. Even though I've not done it, but I'm trying to figure out what the hell it's how is it going to look. So, you know, in terms of relatability, I think anyone's going to be able to make this. I really hope so. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this is a lot of work going into something that, you know, 10 people watch.
Hopefully more than 10 people, but yeah, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to like develop this menu again for like a one-off.
We're Uncle Ted Sarandos' charity project.
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on. We're gonna break out of
who's the
role.
Uncle? Who's the uncle in Great Expectations?
I don't know. I've never read Great Expectations. You know, who is it? He's shaking his head no. You've read Great Expectations?
Dude.
Is it Pumblechook?
I don't know.
Pumblechook?
Pumblechook.
No, I have no idea.
Chucklefuck?
Uncle Chucklefuck!
Like, great. Anyway.
Definitely is not that.
We talked long enough about DTL, but stay tuned for tomorrow, 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 7, that makes 7 p.m. East Coast
it
time.
It does. It does.
And for people living in Chicago, that would be...
Who are now no longer watching.
Is it Chicago 5 p.m.?
6 p.m. 6 p.m.
6 p.m. Central.
1 p.m. Hawaii time. That's for those of you watching in Hawaii.
So we really want to do a Chicago menu. All right, let's take a break. All right, folks, give us 5 stars. Watch Dinner Time Live tomorrow, 4 p.m. Eastern, no, Pacific Standard Time.
Pacific Daylight Time now.
Or whatever. Same.